time now. Only retreat or surrender. Or death.
Well, that's an easy choice for us, Arcadian. Spartans never retreat. Spartans never surrender.
Go, spread the word. Let every Greek assembled know the truth of this.
Let each among them search his own soul.
While you're at it, search your own.
This is the Warrior Mind Podcast, and I'm your host, Greg Swanson. Podcasting from beautiful Bend, Oregon, the Warrior Mind Podcast is a personal empowerment series that gives you the information required to develop a mindset of a warrior, maximize your human potential, and achieve peak performance. Over 4 years and going strong, with over 200,000 downloads from over 9 countries and 5 continents. I'm Greg Swanson, and this is the Warrior Mind Podcast. To find out more about Warrior Mind Coaching and Training, please visit us at www.warriormindcoach.com. Hope everyone's doing well today. I'm actually competing, as you're listening to this, if you're listening to it on Saturday, in a local CrossFit competition. So I pre-recorded this podcast, and actually this is a special edition. I'm interviewing a very good friend of mine, Emily Cortez, who used to be a client, and now she's a successful speaker, author, and owner of a mountain guide and a women's adventure company called Call of the Wild. Emily made a wonderful, courageous transition from corporate life to entrepreneur a couple of years ago, and she shares her story with me during this interview. So please listen. She's an amazing woman, and I really think you're going to enjoy this interview.
Well, Emily, welcome. Thank you so much. I mean, we've known each other for 4 years or so, but again, thank you for your time today to come on to be interviewed. You have an amazing story, and I wanted the listeners to hear it firsthand from you. So thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So, you know, I've talked about you in general, not by name specific, on my star coaching client, if you will. But If you could give a little bit about the background of yourself, you know, where you came from, kind of what your dreams were, because again, this is for, you know, empowering people to go after what they want in life. And so if you could give us a little bit of a background of where you were, kind of the vision you had and the courageous steps you took forward, and then we'll go from there.
All right. Yeah, I'd be happy to. So my background was really mainly in the corporate world, and for kind of a variety of reasons, a little bit of instability in my childhood. I lost a parent. Another one really wasn't involved. I really was kind of laser focused on being very ambitious and trying to get into a lucrative career just because stability was really the most important thing to me. So I identify a lot with people who are in corporate jobs, who have, you know, good income, great benefits, but who may be feeling stuck, because after about 17 years of working in finance and investments and in pretty high pressure jobs, I found that, you know, there were some aspects of it that were rewarding, and it was great to feel successful at something and kind of be loved by my clients in a challenging environment, but I was feeling very, very unfulfilled. And as is often the case, there's some kind of catalyst that pushes you towards examining your life a little bit more than you might not otherwise when you're on autopilot. And for me, it doesn't sound that dramatic, but it was an ACL tear in my knee, and I had to have reconstructive surgery, and the surgery didn't go very well. And on the side, my passion was mountaineering, so pretty hardcore mountaineering, big mountains, high altitude, developing countries. That was really kind of my compensation mechanism for dealing with the pressure in the corporate world, was to go and have these amazing perspective resetting experiences. And when I tore my ACL and 14 months later, I still really couldn't walk without a limp. I was unable to even hike and get into the wilderness at all. So I basically had to face work for what it was without the ability to decompress from it. And it made me really question what I was doing with my life and how I was spending my time, and the lack of fulfillment and excitement and impact that I was feeling. So I can't even remember how I found you, Greg. I think somehow someone suggested that I like your page, and I just totally dug the messages that you were putting out. I mean, there were these two aspects of you that I was very attracted to. One was that, I mean, you basically look like a Navy SEAL.
Thank you.
So I was like, I think this guy is going to get my ambition. Whereas other people who are like trying to find balance in their life is like, oh, just get your zen on and be happy with what you have and, you know, meditate while washing the dishes, you know. But I want to climb Everest. So a lot of
right.
people don't understand that kind of ambition and drive. But you also had all of this stuff about working with your unconscious and subconscious and how you can have the best laid plans, but if you don't do that inner work, you're going to self-sabotage. And I was like, I totally get that. So it was like the right combination of what I jokingly call the woo-woo stuff, but the, you know, the inner work, and then feeling like you'd get the physical aspect of what I want to do, the ambition, the drive that I think is a little bit unusual, at least for a small woman in mountaineering.
Right, right.
So I was really in a very stuck place, and I was really quite depressed, and I felt like I was in quicksand. And for the first time in my life, as somebody who's very self-sufficient and independent, I felt like I could not pull myself out on my own and basically put a hand out and reached out to ask for help from someone else.
Yeah, I mean, when we first met, it was just great experience. And so, just for the listeners, Emily participated in the Warrior's Quest, and it was funny that at one point during there, I asked her, you know, what did she want, and she laid out for me exactly what she wanted, and it was a 2-year plan. And I said, how about 1 year? She went, And what's amazing that you took the initiative, you did everything that we coached around, everything that you committed to, and within 1 year, you were up here in Bend. And so Emily, you know, is a fantastic author, a great speaker, and a guide, and she owns, as I mentioned, the Call of the Wild. And so when you got up here, I mean, this is when your life really started to shift, but that jump from corporate to entrepreneur, it sounds easy, right? Oh, yeah, one day I became an entrepreneur. But what was some of the mental challenges that you were going through?
Oh, man. First, I got to comment on that because I remember that like it was yesterday. I remember negotiating with you, and we actually agreed on 18 months because I would not say like 12 months was possible for such a radical shift. But then I was really, really open and just saying like, each month we kept meeting and working on objectives and just, you know, chipping away at it. Every little aspect of buying the house in Bend, exploring what the opportunities were, which then is amazing how manifestation can actually work. The opportunity to buy Call of the Wild came up. I was working on my speaking material and gigs and working on my blogs, all while in a very high-pressure corporate job to do all of this on the side. But it was really just chipping away at it little by little. And I was totally shocked when it was exactly 1 year and 2 days from the date that we had that conversation. And I'm not sure that I really was focusing on that 12-month timeline, but I was just focused and moving
yep.
forward and making progress, and it worked out to be 12 months. But it is a pretty big deal. And I think a lot of people are really intimidated by such a big change. And a year of working very focused on something, you know, you can do a lot. And we make choices in our priorities to say, I'm going to go home and I'm going to watch Netflix. I'm going to go home and I'm going to look at my list of what my priorities are, and I'm going to write this blog post, and I'm going to reach out to that company about a speaking opportunity, and I'm going to contact the realtor in Bend. And in the end, those things often take a lot less time than sitting down and watching a 2-hour movie. So that's one of the things that I think I'm pretty good at and I see other people struggle with. I mean, what I actually really don't watch TV as a result, because it's amazing what you can get done in a couple of hours and how the time sort of fritters away in front of a television. But the main issue that I struggled with and still work through to this day was the financial security part. It wasn't necessarily it's partly, you know, believing in myself, like, can I do this? Can I go out on my own? What's it going to look like? What, trying to carefully craft the vision, because sometimes you really do get what you wish for. But the financial security part, because it's been such an integral portion of how I'd made my decisions in my life up until that point. And it was mostly based on, out of fear, fear of not having financial security, fear of not knowing exactly where the next paycheck was going to come from, or what the future was going to look like. As someone who was in financial services especially, we're really drilled into our heads about, you know, you got to have health insurance and you got to have this and you got to be saving a certain amount per month for retirement. And I will say I do have amazing health insurance thanks to Obamacare. So that should be a worry that's taken off everybody's plate right now. It's like you will have some kind of health insurance. I remember we jokingly called it the inner accountant and talked about how to satisfy the inner accountant in order to be able to move forward. So I think it was really my primary obstacle that I had to work through.
Right. And what I heard, you know, just now for the listeners, but what I've observed with you also is that you had a very, very strong, compelling future. You knew exactly what you wanted. And it was that compelling future. And I talked to, you know, on my podcast and to other clients, I talk about what do you want? What do you want? It has to be specific. You have to have this crystal clear picture. And what I saw in you and what I observed in you, Emily, is that you had that compelling future. So that compelling future was a lot stronger than your fear. And that compelling future allowed you to say, I'm not going to watch Netflix, or I'm not going to watch this, I'm not going to watch that. You had that compelling future. And it was just vibrating at such a high level that that you manifested it.
Yeah, but you know what's also interesting about that is, like, I sort of knew it deep down, and I could tell someone, like, yeah, I want to be a motivational speaker. Yeah, I really have a lot of, you know, feel really good when I have an impact on somebody on a personal level when I'm guiding a trip. But to sit down and, like, do the visualization exercises, and what I really appreciated was stepping back from, okay, here's a linear path towards some goal. Because there's also a lot of, you know, societal expectations and family expectations about, well, I'm here and it will be courageous to go to that point. But if you kind of lift the veil on all of that and just sit back and really say, what do I want my perfect day to look like? And I remember this very clearly too, saying, like, I want to get up and not feel stressed, not have an alarm, and do my yoga and meditation. I'm going to make breakfast for myself. That was a really important thing for me, is like sitting down and making good, healthy meals and not being rushed and taking stuff out to go. And then my day is going to unfold in a variety of ways, because I, even though I was in finance, I was actually had a lot of creativity that I wanted to express. I wanted to work on my photography. I wanted to write speeches. I wanted to write blogs and books. And then I wanted to work on planning trips so that I would get out into the field and actually work with people one-on-one, which I find super inspiring. And as I look at my life now, I'm actually doing those things. And I think there would have been a variety of ways or occupations or careers or whatever that I could have done that. But by starting with how I really wanted to craft that life, and that included moving to Bend and all of that, and then said, okay, now very, you know, carefully say, how do I build the structure around me, what I'll actually be doing, so I can get that feeling and I'll have those days like that? Because I could have easily said, well, I'm just going to go work for another company. But then you don't have the freedom of getting up and planning and writing and doing all of that when you're still working for other people.
Right. And speaking of doing all that, there's, you know, congratulations on Women's Entrepreneur of the Year up here in Bend. And then also you gave a commencement speech yesterday. Speaking career. So let me hear a little bit about the commitment speech. That must have been just inspiring for you. I've seen some great feedback from COCC, the students there. But tell us a little bit about how that happened and what your experience was with it.
It's pretty funny how it developed. So I've been working very hard on the motivational speaking side, although I'll admit that the Call of the Wild and the adventure travel side has actually eclipsed a little bit of the energy that I want to put into the motivational speaking. But I've done a number of keynotes, you know, speak at least twice a month all over the place. But I was starting to get to a place where I'm like, okay, I'm going to say no to more and more opportunities and really focus on the opportunities that I think are very meaningful, that have impact to to the audience, and that will have impact to my motivational speaking career. And I'd been doing that for about 6 months, and one thing popped up where I was like, ooh, I'm saying yes to this. So it was the Bend Chamber of Commerce Women of the Year Awards, and I was asked to be a judge. And they'd actually originally wanted me to be the full keynote. However, I was going to be in Uganda scouting a trip for Call of the Wild. It was a very exciting trip. And it just so happened that on the exact day of the award ceremony, I would be attempting to climb the highest peak of Uganda. So I pitched them the idea of, why don't we just do like a little mini keynote that's videotaped saying, I would be here with you, but hopefully you'll find this a good excuse that I'm 9,000 miles away trying to climb the highest mountain in an East African country.
Right, right.
And they loved it. And so I did it. And I also remember I have a wonderful videographer in town who's Emmy Award winning, who gives me great deals because he really supports my mission. And on the spur of the moment, we ran up to Mount Bachelor. I did the speech in one take, and then they aired it. And the woman who won Woman of the Year is the vice president of OSU Cascades, Becky Johnson. She saw that and said, that's who I want for my keynote speaker. Mm. And the thing that was so awesome about that it wasn't about, you know, me pitching or whether or not I had credentials or anything like that. It's like she saw me speak for 5 minutes and said, I want her.
Right.
And that was very rewarding to me. So it really actually, you know, having done a few keynotes and talked to large audiences before, it was surprising to me actually how intimidating this felt. You know, it's going to be an audience of 2,500 people, and it's really quite formal, and there's a tremendous amount of exposure around it beforehand. They had a whole social media campaign, and there was a profile on me in the local paper. So it felt like the pressure was on, but once I just went back to, you know, this is my material, I did a slightly different spin on it just because it was really focused on students and how they're going to go out and embrace life. So it's all about embracing obstacles instead of facing them. And I believe that the more you embrace them and try to learn from them and even expect them, the more resilient you'll be and the less surprised you'll be by them. And in doing so, then I really think that's an important component of embracing life, because if you hit an obstacle and you, you know, smash your face into it and fall right down, wow, I mean, it's just so demoralizing. And how do you get back up and go like, yeah, I'm loving life, versus, oh, hello, obstacle, here you are. Now what are we going to do about you? What can I learn from you? Can I go around you? Do I need to look at some other way? Do I need to blast right through you? Like, what does this all really mean? Feels like part of what can make some people successful and other people just hit walls and give up. And that was my main message to the students. And, yeah, people seem to really love it. I mean, I can say I felt really good about it, but I really look for the feedback of others, whether or not I've reached them. And
right,
as we were walking back out of the reverse processional, people were reaching over and saying, wow, I loved your speech. That was really great. Thank you so much. And that's super rewarding for me.
Oh, that's fantastic. And really, when you think about it, you know, when you're climbing a mountain, you're going to hit obstacles. It's just a given fact. It's
absolutely, like every single one of my stories has to do with mountains.
Right. I mean,
like,
I mean, you know, I'm, you know, I think one of the reasons we connected so well is I love mountaineering as well, and I don't do it as a profession like you do, but we could relate to the stories and the and the metaphors that a mountain plays in life. But you know, you're exactly right. Is when we go out on a trail or go up climbing, we know, we don't know what it's going to be, but we know we're going to hit an obstacle. We know it's there. And when you can and here's what I talk about with people about self-confidence. Sometimes people think self-confidence is, oh, I'm going to get to the top of the mountain, or I'm going to win the race. Well, what I coach people on, self-confidence is knowing that whatever happens, you'll be okay. And so what I heard with you, Emily, is that you have this self-confidence that you go up on a mountain, even if you've gone on it before, but you don't know what's going to happen, yet you have the self-confidence that no matter what obstacle comes, you'll be okay.
You know, that's really interesting. I was just having this conversation with someone the other day about how people want to be told, as you're starting to hike up a mountain, and they want to be told, like, yeah, you can do it. And the truth is, I will be honest with people and say, I don't know if you can do it. I don't even know if I can do it this time, because I've done that mountain 5 times before, because all sorts of things happen. you know, we have their bodies to deal with and the weather and the team dynamics. But one thing I know is that I'm going to keep moving forward. And whatever comes my way, I'm going to deal with it.
Right.
And there may come an obstacle that actually turns me around. And I will go back down, and then I will reevaluate. So it actually kind of helps me because it sort of keeps very low expectations and being very open, just what's the experience, how is this going to unfold for me, instead of saying, I will make it to the top no matter what, and then you don't make it to the top, and then you're demoralized.
Right.
Like the yep. goal, you have the goal, you know where you're going, but you still have to be kind of open for what comes your way and then to deal with it. And there's good and there's bad. But ultimately, as you keep making forward progress, you will make it to that goal. It's just, you know, I always have that goal in mind, and the bigger the mountain, the more intimidating it is, and sometimes the harder it is to visualize all the steps it takes to get there. But, you know, you have it in your mind's eye. You know that's where you're going. And then you break it all the way back down to what's the next step I need to make right
yep.
now. And if you don't make that next step, you're not going to get there.
Right,
but
right.
If you do, you have a chance you're going to get there, right?
Absolutely. And what's interesting is that, let's just say you don't get to the summit. That doesn't mean you didn't reach your goal. What happens is we often put a time frame on a goal, and if we don't hit in that time frame, we give up. Well, no, you know, if you don't get to the top of that specific mountain at that time, it doesn't mean you can't come back and try it again and try it again. So the goal is not lost. It just hasn't been accomplished in a time frame that was determined.
Yep. Yeah, this actually reminds me a little bit of another thing I've been riffing on, because I think in the concept of leadership, a lot of people, and I will see women do this more than men, but just generally people are like, well, I want to lead in an environment where I already know what's going to happen. I already know the mountain. I already know the client. I already know the project. I know the expectations. And then I'm confident that I will be able to lead, right?
Mm.
But what I actually found that I enjoy leading the most is things that I haven't done before.
Yes.
Because that's the challenge of saying, I know where we're going, I'm going to bring you along with me, but I can't tell you exactly what to expect along the way. And this is the same thing as management in the corporate world. You know your goal, but you don't know how it's all going to unfold. So you have to have the confidence to bring people along with you and inspire them with what the ultimate vision is, but you are always leading in unknown territory.
Yep,
and
yep.
that, I think, is real leadership versus I'm going to get this trip totally dialed and know every aspect and every corner and every inch of elevation gain and then lead people up it. And
right.
I'm actually trying to work with my guides, who are amazing, amazing women that know their stuff, that are very professional, and I totally respect their desire to go and scout things beforehand. But they're so experienced that if you're doing a day hiking trip where there's somewhere with good maps, you don't really need to go. Like, you know how to lead a trip. You know how to move around
right.
in the mountains. You know how to figure out what to expect simply even just from a map. But I find that so interesting how people are afraid to lead into uncharted waters. And it doesn't mean that you have to know every step along the way to that path. You just need to know where you're going.
Right. And it's very similar if you just take it to a personal level. It's almost the equivalent of people saying, I'm not going to go in the pool until I learn how to swim.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You have to get the feedback. You have to get the experience. You have to get in the pool and flounder around and, you know, be cautious. Obviously, you know, you start the shallow end. You don't go into deep end. But the thing is that you get that experience. And this is what's wonderful about you is in on your climbs that you have this confidence of past experiences. You look back and look at all the times that you succeeded, even if you didn't make it to the top. You still look at it as a success, where many people will go, I didn't get there, I didn't do this, I didn't do that, and they start to hold themselves back from accomplishing or trying other things, whether it's in business, whether it's in their life. Yet you, in our conversations, you know, when we've had coffee talk and other things, is every single experience that you have out there, you look back on and going, it was a success because of this. It was a success because of this. And you have this wonderful perspective on all of your past experiences.
Yeah, and I think we as a culture have to stop being so afraid to do what we refer to as failing.
Right.
And either embrace it as failure or call it something else. because when I do look back at every single climb I've done, and that's really where my life lessons have come, is from my personal mountaineering. I had a great time, and I felt a lot of accomplishment on the times that I summited, and the trip went absolutely perfectly, swimmingly well. But when I look at where I learned something, it's always on the trips where we didn't summit. This is where I learned something about myself. I learned something about interpersonal and team dynamics. I learned something about the weather, about how to prepare better. Like, you learn from these experiences, and if it all just kind of unfolds perfectly, then, you know, I don't know, it almost seems like it's too easy. How do you grow?
Right.
How do you grow if you don't have these times that you have to take a moment to reflect upon and then use that information as you go forward?
Right. There's an African saying that says smooth waters does not make a good sailor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's kind of what I'm hearing. So, you know, with your Call of Your Wild, for the listeners, it's a women's only event, right? I mean, you have women.
Yes.
Guides, you're the guide, and it's all for women. Tell us a little bit more about Call of the Wild itself, and where do you go, and some of the adventures.
Sure, yeah, and it is very unique that it's all women only, and that's special to me because, well, I mean, most of my climbing partners are actually men, and I love guys, but there's a different dynamic when it's all women, and there are a lot of women who are intimidated by a co-ed environment because, God forbid they have a bad day, then it's because they were the woman in the group.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're all women, then you can't look at each other and go, oh, well, I don't feel well, or I'm, you know, the straggler today, or I'm the least experienced. You can't feel bad about yourself because you're a woman. So that is amazingly powerful.
Right, yeah.
Because then you're like, you know, you're all on equal footing, and then you can feel a little bit more comfortable about putting yourself out there, about challenging yourself, about, you know, potentially failing at something, and just not being embarrassed about it. It's all a learning experience. But the main thing about Call of the Wild is that we have kind of a variety of trips. So that way, if you haven't really been in the wilderness before, you just want to dip your toe in the water, you can go and stay in a hotel and do guided hikes or snowshoes and go eat in a restaurant at night. Because for some people, that's their challenge. That's their limit, and that's what is intimidating to them. So they need to just dip their toe in the water and go, oh, okay, you know, I am comfortable in a group. I can learn to snowshoe. And then you kind of graduate to the, I'm going to camp, and I'm going to sleep on the ground, and then I'm going to go do these day hikes. Or maybe I'll go hut to hut, like we have a High Sierra camp in Yosemite, where you are able to get into the backcountry without carrying a really heavy pack. So there's a lot of those kinds of trips, and they're mostly domestic as well. So we're in Yosemite, Death Valley, Grand Canyon, Zion, Bryce, up here in Oregon. And those are much better beginner intermediate trips. So you're starting to get a little bit more physically challenging. You might have to actually train because people underestimate how hard it is to hike for 5 days in a row, even if the hiking isn't super hard. Like most of us go out and just hike 1 day a week.
Mm-hmm.
Then the hardest trips are mostly the international trips. We also do Mount Whitney as a backpack, and that's a pretty tough trip. So you're carrying a heavy pack for 7 days and going up to the highest point in the lower 48 at around 14,500 feet. So that's a very strenuous trip, and you do need to train for that. Most of the other difficult ones are, like, we do Tour de Mont Blanc, so we circumnavigate Mont Blanc going hut to hut, but the days are 8 to 12 miles and between 2 and 4,000 elevation feet gain and loss with only one rest day, and a lot of people don't do a rest day. So that's a tough trip. And then we do Annapurna Base Camp, Everest Base Camp in Nepal. We do Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania and Mount Kenya in Kenya, and now offering the Ruwenzori's Trek, not climbing any of the peaks, but honestly, that trek is one of the hardest treks I've ever done in my entire life. So it is really for, like, the female adventurer who wants to get out there and say, like, what is it like to get up into these amazing, remote, high mountains that very few people have set their eyes upon. But
wow.
With some training and a little bit of experience, I really want people to have at least been to a developing country once before they show up to do this trek.
Right, exactly.
But that's kind of where I'm going, is expanding more internationally as well, because my experience with mountaineering was international. I already have all these partnerships and relationships in place, I can go back and offer the treks and the backpacks there.
Right. And what type of transformation do you see the participants go through in some of these?
Yeah, it's interesting. People are always telling me I should market that we do transformation because it happens a lot and organically, but I just don't want to guarantee transformation because it's so different for every person. And some people will just come and have an awesome time in the community of women, but a lot of people really face things that were troubling them or they've even been hiding from or that they weren't even aware of was an issue. So we kind of naturally bring these things out that we see during the day as life lessons. So
right.
One example I love is this woman on Kilimanjaro who, I always give the talk about, you're not a burden, you got to take care of yourself, you know, we're a team, and if any one of us is struggling, you actually hurt the team. So don't sit there and don't take care of your blister or, you know, drinking or layering or all of that because you're worried you're going to hold back the team, because by taking care of yourself, you make the whole team stronger. So we were coming down off of Lava Tower, which is about 15,500 feet, and it had been very cold up there. And this one woman kept saying, oh, I think I need to take my jacket off. And I was like, okay, well, let's stop and do it. She's like, no, I don't want to stop the group. I'm like, okay, fine. So we keep hiking. She says it again. I'm like, okay, well, let's stop. No, I'm fine. I'll manage. And finally, she asks the third time, oh, you know, I think I really should take this jacket off. And I'm like, okay, everybody stop. We're taking a break. And she said, I knew if I said it a third time, then you would stop. And it totally blew me away. Like, on the one hand, I could easily, as a guide, be, like, really annoyed with that.
right.
But I was more like, wow, what an illuminating thing that we, as, and I'm generalizing, because generalizing makes things easier sometimes, but we as women so often don't want to be the burden and we'll play the martyr.
Yeah.
Right? They're like, oh, you know, I didn't want to bother the group, and you didn't listen to me the first couple of times, even though I said, yeah, let's stop. And it kind of blew me away because I think we go through life saying, oh, my needs don't matter, and I don't want to speak my truth, and I don't want to stand up for myself and say, I am stopping now. I really need this. And so we'll have conversations like that over dinner because I think it's really important to say, look at what we did today. What does that mean? How does that, you know, it actually really hurts us. It hurts the team. It can hurt our families when we don't take care of ourselves and we play the martyr role. You know, you don't get your needs met and other people don't know how to help you. So that's just one example of one situation that, you know, happened in a 10-minute time that was like, wow, let's blow this up. Like, this is a really, really big thing about how we operate in the world. And if we change it, we and the others around us could be a lot happier.
Yeah, and you know, there's a saying that one of my mentors uses, and actually there's been some studies by a psychologist that talk about how you do anything is a reflection of how you do everything. And so, you know, these things that come out under stress on the mountain, you know, really can illuminate some of these disempowering behaviors that individuals have. And I'm so glad that, you know, you may not advertise it as transformation, but you can't help but be transformed even if you've gone up a mountain five times before. It's always a new experience. But it's great to hear that, you know, you have the sensory acuity to hear and see these things and then bring it up as a lesson and a learning.
Yep. I just feel like the wilderness is sort of this microscope. And it is, you know, you're removed from your daily life. You are in a stressful situation. You're also surrounded by beauty and peace. And it is just amazing what can come out. But you've got to see it. You've got to name it and then try to remember it. So
yes.
I also do, it's a very simple little exercise, but at the end we do these postcards, and each person gets two postcards. And one, they write something nice about the person to one side of them, and they don't share it with them. And I mail it like 6 months in advance, and it's just a nice little thing to say, you know, get something from someone you met saying, I loved your laugh, or really appreciated it when you supported me that day.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little pick-me-up. And then the second postcard they write is just whatever it was that they got out of that trip that they know when they get back to their daily life and they get back in the rat race and they forget. So easy to forget these lessons. So what is it, that thing that you want to remind yourself 6 months down the road when you forgot? And I have all of these postcards all over my house. And I'm just randomly sent send them off, and people will tell me that, like, they arrived at just the right time when they needed that reminder.
Oh, fantastic. That is awesome. That is great. So in addition to guiding, you know, you're on a path of becoming a world-renowned speaker. How do you see the next, 6 months rolling out for you, Emily, as far as the guiding and the speaking going on?
Well, with the guiding, I know that I'll be at Tour de Mont Blanc and doing 5 trips in Africa, so that will keep me pretty busy, which has also forced me to have a little bit more laser focus about what I want to do and where I want to expend my energy to make that progress in the motivational speaking arena. And where I'm at right now is I'm focusing exclusively on a TEDx opportunity. So I'll be working with a TEDx coach. I have the material pretty much done. I've got the locations that I'll be applying for. It's a year out. But that is what I've identified as the one thing that will have the maximal impact and the most exposure and the biggest, basically, like, stamp of approval over anything else that I've done.
Fantastic.
And yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Once you get busy and you go, I got to focus, you go, what's the one thing I can do? And then you do it instead
of
here's the 20 things I could be doing and I'm splitting my energy and not all of them have great return on investment. So that's my goal.
Great. Awesome. And what's interesting, you know, again, for the listeners, I've worked with Emily for quite a long time. And in the beginning, she would just get out there and you would do a lot of different speaking for different size groups and all of it. And, you know, kept encouraging you to start to get paid for it and then get bigger groups. And now what I heard is a specific, what's the one thing that's going to have the biggest impact on my speaking career? Boom, TEDx. And that is, and that's what we kind of, when we coached for that year, it was like, what's the one thing that'll have the biggest impact on you moving forward? And that was always a question. And I asked that a lot, but you know, you've kind of taken that and solidified that now with what's the one thing that's going to have the biggest impact on your speaking career and TEDx. And wow, that is awesome to hear that laser focus. I mean, there's a lot of learning in that for the listeners.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. It does, and it also feels good not to spread yourself too thin.
Yep.
Like there's a time for it. I had a time of experimentation where, you know, there's the sort of pay your dues aspect of just get out there, get your material out there, refine it, make mistakes, get the feedback, get your name known, you know, start, and then certain invitations turn into other invitations and the ball starts rolling. But now it's at a point where I'm really hot on the unpaid circuit. There's tons of people that ask me to speak all the time and it's great to have this reputation and be in demand, but I'm saying no all the time now, and I'm saying, what do I need to do to where I'm going to be getting the opportunities where I'm excited about and I want to say yes? And that is the TEDx focus.
Perfect. Awesome. So, Emily, again, thank you so much. Can you give the listeners information on how to contact you about if they want to hire you for a speaker or if they want to connect with you and book a trip with you? Give us all your contact information.
Absolutely. So I'm both on the web and on Facebook. And for the speaking and my personal branding, it's emilycortez.com, and that's emilycortez.com. And then for Call of the Wild and learning more about the company and the trips we're offering, the email address is trips@callwild.com or go to www.callwild.com. It's all one word, Call Wild.
And you also have a Facebook page, right? So it's Facebook Call Wild or Call of the Wild on your Facebook page?
Oh, just look up Call of the Wild Adventures. You'll find us over anything Jack London related.
Right.
Adventures in there.
Well, Emily, again, thank you so much for your time today and sharing some of your stories. I'm sure we could go on and on and on and talk about and reminisce about the times that we coached and all of your stuff.
Yep.
But you've set such a shining example for not just women, but especially for women, what somebody can do with determination, with a clear vision and the courage to take those steps, but also for everybody out there who's in this transition of I'm not happy where I am. I know what I really want to do, or I perceive I know what I want to do. But you've just exhibited that courage, the determination on how to move forward. So I want to thank you for being an example for all of us, and then also thank you for your time today.
Seriously, it is totally my pleasure. And if this helps anyone get out of a rut, I will just be so incredibly pleased.
Great. Thanks so much, then.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Warrior Mind podcast. If you like what you heard, please tell your friends and subscribe at warriormindcoach.com/podcast. Also, make sure you sign up for the Warrior Mind newsletter and check out our blog at warriormindcoach.com/blog. Until next time, live with courage. And remember, every facet, every compartment of your mind is to be programmed by you. And unless you take your rightful responsibility and begin to program your own mind, the world will program it for you.
I am not a warrior. Very soon.